Yeah. You rely on Mr. Computer, and he just sort of says, that's just hellfire, the whole thing. Good morning, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Good morning, Emma Tinson, how are you?
Good morning, I'm okay, thank you.
That's
how are you?
All right. Yeah, I'm fine. All wonderful stuff as we actually head through a programme which obviously needs to start off with the weather forecast, because otherwise, what would the Midweek Drive Morning Edition be, or indeed any of our siren shows? It's a high of 4 degrees centigrade today, a low of minus 1 degree centigrade. Cold, cloudy start with patchy mist and fog that will clear, and there may be some sunny intervals in the afternoon. Coming up next, how you can ensure that your car is fully roadworthy with Maria McCarthy. Very true in a whole range of ways, but it would seem that car repairs, not only can they possibly be frightening us with respect to the cost, but they're also actually putting a lot of cars on the road at risk. A recent study carried out by Car Loan for You suggested that of 2,000 drivers, there were heaps of problems around the whole sort of base with wing mirrors, with exhaust. So to address this issue and to actually sort of provide us with some very sage advice, we're delighted to be able to welcome ace motoring journalist and general author extraordinaire of such wonderful texts as The Girl's Car Handbook and The Girl's Guide to Losing Your L-Plates. We're talking about the ace radio and TV motoring expert, Maria McCarthy. How are you, Maria?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. So this particular aspect, and I have to say, looking at the top 10 faults, I've probably over the last 20 years been guilty of at least 9 of the 10 of them. I think the only one I haven't actually sort of been guilty of is bald tyres. But yes, dents, yes, central locking problems, yes, air conditioning, yes, snap crack, yes, and so on and so forth. But it is one of those areas where we hear so many nightmare tales of cowboy operators, and people say, oh, yes, well, that's a cracked window. That'll be at least £5,000. What? So there are challenges there, aren't there?
There are, but I mean, I think basically, I've been looking at the survey by Car Loan for You, which says that 14% of us don't feel safe driving our own cars. Mm. And I think, you know, that is a really sort of like serious issue, because I think what happens is, as people's cars get older and they get a bit more bashed about and so forth, they start to see them as being a bit like a sort of comfortable old sofa. But in actual fact, unlike a comfortable old sofa, if you get something wrong with your car, it can actually sort of like, you know, injure you, or, you know, injure the people about you. I mean, things like, you know, defective brakes or bald tyres. It's not a bit like, oh no, it's my car's getting a bit of an old banger. You could actually, you know, run somebody down and kill them on account of that. And even if it wasn't something, you know, quite as major and tragic, you could be pulled over by the police and get 3 points on your license, which is going to, like, you know, last for 4 years, and it'll affect your car insurance premiums and so forth. So I think really we've got a responsibility to look after our cars and, you know, do the checks and take them to the garage if anything serious is going on. And, you know, if the car is genuinely unroadworthy, then to sort of think, right, okay, it's time to say goodbye and get another car.
I think very sage words there in a whole range of ways, and you're absolutely right. I mean, you've got more than a ton of metal that could actually be a lethal instrument, so be very careful. It isn't a sofa, even though it might occasionally feel like one. But in terms of addressing, again, the classic line, how do you find that trustworthy garage? Because sometimes we find a wonderful sort of garage, and then they might retire, they might sort of work through all sorts of other areas, etc. What is the secret to finding a good garage mechanic to actually sort of ensure that the car is properly serviced, maintained and looked after?
I think that one step is obviously personal recommendation. The next step is look for membership of a professional organisation, like the retail motor industry runs a scheme called Trust My Garage. So you might want to go on the internet and look at, like, you know, garages that are trusted, registered with that, or another trustworthy scheme. And I think the other thing is go in gently, you know, don't go in, like, you know, the first time for like an MOT or so forth, you know, go in for something like minor, like, you know, a head bulb change or something, and sort of see how they treat you, and you know, whether or not they're happy about, you know, explaining things and, you know, talking you through the bill and so forth. Another of my tips I always give about, like, going to a garage is, if you get them to do any work, always sort of say, don't go above, you know, such a price without phoning me first, because what you don't want is them to go ahead and do a whole load of work and then, like, present you for a bill for £1,000 or something, which might be worth more than the car is worth. So always like set a limit on how much that you'll let them do. And then the third thing is what I did when I found my independent garage, which I love, is I've got I've done car maintenance classes. You know, I'm not a qualified mechanic, but I do have friends who are, and also like people who just know a lot about cars. So what I tend to do is to get the bill for what I've the work I've had done, and discuss it with one of those friends, either on the phone or send them an email. And if they sort of say that's a bargain, then I know I've got a good garage, and then I can like move forward and start having major things done, like, you know, go to my MOT or so forth. But I think it's like any relationship, you know, you just ease in gradually and sort of see how it goes.
Can social networking and social media help these kind of things? I mean, are we in the position of liking garages and working through that?
Yes.
There are various websites.
I mean, I think reading reviews and so forth online. I mean, of course, like, reviews can vary because, like, you know, you never really know if they're, like, you know, written by somebody's mum or something. But I think that certainly. I mean, if you're on a sort of local Twitter or Facebook, you know, put a shout out. You know, about whether or not, you know, friends or friends of friends might be able to recommend you a good garage.
There are a couple of fundamentals that have always been drilled home from my own point of view that you should always look to check: water and oil levels, obviously, tyres to check for signs of wear and tear and so on. Any other particular areas which you'd say are fairly simple checks that you can actually do and really should be carried out at least on a weekly basis?
That's right. It's the powder check. It's petrol or diesel, then it's oil, and then the other sort of like fluids, like, so, like, you know, brake fluid, and, you know, whether or not the windscreen washing material is filled up. W is like the wipers. D is any sort of like damage, you know, rust and so forth. And then R is rubber, which is the tyres. So that's one little sort of mnemonic that you can use to sort of, like, you know, make sure that you've done all the proper checks.
And allowing for the notion that if you bought a new car, pretty much once you drive it off the forecourt, it starts to depreciate in value. Do you think that in essence, actually looking for the used car market and so on, that's also a way forward, and clearly it's something where, when times are tight and we're living in times of austerity, it's more likely to be something that the people need to obviously check out and work through.
Exactly. I think that getting a new-ish car, you know, perhaps a newer one than the one that you've got, can often be of value, because obviously it'll have done, hopefully it may well have done fewer miles. It'll probably have, like, you know, just had less sort of like wear and tear on it. It's probably have better safety features. You know, if you've got children, particularly if you're carrying them around, newer cars tend to have like better fuel economy. So, you know, I think there comes a point where, you know, the vehicle that you've got, you know, if you go back to the garage, I mean, that's the whole thing. If you sort of like think, gosh, I see more of my garage mechanic than I do of my best friend or whatever, then it can be time to sort of think, oh, you know, perhaps it's time to get a newer car. Perhaps not necessarily like a top of the range, brand spanking, you know, a new car smell car, but, you know, a newer one that'd be a like, nice little reliable workhorse for you to sort of go forward with.
Or even conceivably, as I've just done myself, a slightly older car, but one which has done 80,000 less miles than the one I've actually worked through. So there we are.
Excellent.
It's a different line from that perspective. Finally, in terms of the breakdown of these particular figures that we've actually got, and breakdown, no pun intended, obviously, but in terms of that, any difference in terms of age? I mean, is it a case of younger drivers are more prone to actually leave the faults to sort of hang on in there, or is it elderly drivers or senior, or have we not sort of drilled down that deep into the actual data?
In my experience, there seems to be middle-aged drivers, a certain sort of person you tend to think of as like your Uncle Ken.
Uh-huh.
You know, he really looks after his car as Uncle Ken.
Yeah.
And ditto, I think, again, often young lads. Often, I remember being behind a young lad once at the car wash, you know, when you do it yourself with the jet and so forth, and you polish everything, and he was polishing and making his car perfect, and it was perfect inside. And I thought, I bet your mum wishes that you looked after your bedroom the way that you look after that car. I think that, and then other people, I think, can be a little bit sort of like slapdash. I mean, much as I sort of like hate to diss my own gender, you know, I mean, I know one woman, she was sort of saying, oh, I've got this warning light that keeps on coming on in my car, so I put a tangerine in front of it so I can't see it anymore, and now the problem is solved.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I won't even comment on that particular one. Maria, it's been fantastic just sharing some thoughts with yourself.
Lovely to talk to you too.
Again, the reminder, it's the Girls' Car Handbook, although I suspect actually it shouldn't be gender specific. It should be Girls' and Boys' Car Handbook. It could be useful for both, I think, from that point of view. And also the Girls' Guide to Losing Your L-Plates, two fantastic texts there. Maria, have you had a reasonably interesting and hopefully glitch-free telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Thank you.
And I take it you might well return in the not-too-distant future.
I hope so.
Didn't have the heart to put the new questions to Maria McCarthy there, but what the hey. The Girl's Guide to Losing Her L-Plates. What do you think, Emma? Do you think that's one you might sort of consider as you possibly might be having 2015 as the year in which you take your own car test and so on?
I think it's interesting. I mean, a lot of people take their driving test and then think, oh, that's all I need to know. And then you forget all the maintenance.
You've got your powder, you've got your other things, you've got your tangerine to keep
tangerine,
on the side.
Very
I always
handy.
Find it very useful in any radio studio if you've got a warning light. Just put your tangerine, put it in front of it, then you can't see.
Sticker on it, no problem.
Exactly. Whether that would be approved of by, of course, our ace film critic and royal correspondent Richard Fitzwilliams, I don't know. What do you think, Richard Fitzwilliams? Tangerines always useful, or is it just a case of no, sort it out, my man?
Not a subject on which I would wish to give an opinion.
Many
fascinating things we'll be talking about. I think wise if I let you decide.
Well, there you are, you see. It's always nice to see who we actually utilise to actually be the official Richard Fitzwilliams warm-up act. And today, of course, it was Maria McCarthy from the Guild of Motoring Writers. So, Richard, lots to actually talk about in terms of, the Academy Award nominations and so on. Any shocks from your own point of view, or did you think, you know, once again Mr. Turner should possibly have actually sort of been celebrated in all sorts of ways after, of course, you were almost incandescent last week with the absence of Mr. Turner from the BAFTA nominations list?
Well, I was indeed, but then I'd strongly expected Mr. Turner to feature in several of the top categories, most certainly Timothy Spall as Best Actor, so certainly Mr. Turner as Outstanding British Film, and I thought Mr. Turner might feature in the Best Film category at the BAFTAs. It didn't. But at the Oscars, the big surprise undoubtedly was Selma, and this has undoubtedly again been the focus of a lot of discontent, a lot of anger, and a good deal of press. I have to say, I mean, we must mention that for some reason they can go up to 10 for Best Picture, and they went up to 8, and we had American Sniper, Birdman, Boyhood, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Imitation Game, Selma, The Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. I would mention that is a marvellous selection of movies. Where Selma shocked was, firstly, there was no nomination for Ava DuVernay, who would have been the first African-American female director to be nominated in that category. And secondly, our own David Oyelowo was not nominated for his superb performance as Martin Luther King in the Best Actor category, but Bradley Cooper for American Sniper was. So here you have the perfect row. American Sniper, a movie we'll be discussing in a few minutes by Clint Eastwood, and certainly very well made, also very jingoistic, versus a movie that taps deep emotions, because obviously it was about the famous Civil Rights March led by Martin Luther King in the 1960s, and also had a surprisingly, this has been very controversial, the way it has portrayed the actions of Lyndon Baines Johnson at that time, superbly played, I have to say, by Tom Wilkinson, but again, rather like Zero Dark Thirty at the Oscars a couple of years ago, whether what is portrayed or how it is portrayed is accurate has caused a lot of rows. I'm delighted to see, by the way, with the Oscars, that Marion Cotillard got a nomination for Best Actress for 2 days, One Night. That I was pleased to see. On the other hand, I mean, a lot of inconsistencies. For example, no nomination Best Picture for Foxcatcher, but you've got Steve Carell, wonderful performances, the billionaire John DuPont, and you've also got the movie nominated by Bennett Miller and the Best Director, so why not Best Picture? So it's been a very controversial selection this year, but obviously a very large number of good performances, and yes, again, Oscar's fondness for those who play tortured geniuses. We're thinking, obviously, Professor Stephen Hawking, played by Eddie Redmayne in The Theory of Everything, and Benedict Cumberbatch's wonderful rendition of Alan Turing in The Imitation Game, and Julianne Moore, so good in being Alice as a professor who is hit with the dreadful disease of Alzheimer's. So, I mean, there is a tremendous amount of talent. Indeed, there's so much talent that there's several nominations I would love to have seen in Best Actor, where we had Steve Carell, we have Bradley Cooper, I've mentioned Benedict Cumberbatch and Eddie Redmayne, and also Michael Keaton for Birdman.
Okay, let's hold it there. Let's hold it there, Richard. I know you could continue on and on with respect to the Academy Awards and so on. Needless to say, Natalie Tuck, our regular Meryl Streep aficionado, said Meryl has done it again, 19th Oscar nomination, so all in full force there with, of course, Into the Woods, and I'm sure we can resonate with that. But Emma, from your own point of view, do you get excited about the Academy Awards? Do you sort of have an Academy Award party when the whole thing happens? Or
I do get excited about award shows. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about it, seeing someone else do
right.
well.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I do. You do get a bit excited when actors you like or films that you like have, you know, been praised for being good, because, you know, it sort of affirms that.
Do you think it's a shoe-in for The Theory of Everything then, and the sort of folk for that?
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really excited to see it, because as soon as I saw the trailer for that, I knew it was going to be a really popular one. And it's great to have, like, so many British actors as well, as you said, with Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game and stuff like that. So it's quite good to see the British aspect coming to Hollywood as well.
Not of course.
You're
not.
Absolutely right, and indeed, I have to say, it's going to be rather exciting. You mentioned, Alex, about the likely win of Eddie Redmayne as Best Actor, and I agree with you, but it isn't certain. And one of the reasons it isn't certain is that at the London Critics Circle Film Awards, which I attended on Sunday, Michael Keaton beat Redmayne. Keaton playing...
No, surely not.
Yes, a superhero who's crashed to Earth in his film role, so he attempts a disastrous comeback on Broadway with results that make it, I have to say, an absolutely marvellous movie. Yes, he did, so it could happen.
Okay, Jessica Ward has come into the studio. Well done, Jessica. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Marvellous. It's great, obviously, recovering from the rock and roll show last night.
Yes,
and
yes,
reunited
right.
with Emma Tinson. So for at least,
yay!
Let me see, oh, I say half an hour. Richard, we've got almost the midweek drive at A-Team on the case. Jessica Ward and Emma Tinson both in the studio. What better way to move to Testament of Youth or indeed Wolf Hall? Where do you wish to take us?
I thought a mention of Wolf Hall. I did admire Mantell's book. I'm not necessarily an admirer of Mantell's views on...
She does look very like Anne Boleyn, or maybe that's just the photography. I just always think when you see photographs of Anne Boleyn and Hilary Mantel together, you think...
Off with, oh. I hadn't expected, I must say. But Hilary Mantel's book, Wolf Hall, I mean, it's a wonderful novel. It's written in a rather odd style, but it certainly was superbly adapted for television. And the way the nation has prepared itself with so much press and so much interest in the Tudors, I mean, they were obsessed by that period, but I did want to mention a superlative performance by Mark Rylance as Thomas Cromwell, abused as a child. He'd been in war. He's a tough, resilient figure, but also very low-key, very humble. He serves his master, Wolsey, very loyally. It is a sympathetic portrait of someone who is regarded as a brute. Look at his portrait at the National Portrait Gallery, and you can see why, not to mention his dissolution of the monasteries and under Henry VIII and so forth. But I was very, very impressed. Wonderful performance by Jonathan Pryce as a rather cynical, extremely... rounded portrayal of Cardinal Wolsey.
But isn't that what Jonathan Pryce does? I mean, he was doing that in Tomorrow Never Dies, the fabulous Pierce Brosnan second Bond movie. I mean, that's what he
giving
does,
the people what they want, you mean.
Exactly, yeah. Something wicked this way comes.
Cardinal Wolsey didn't give Henry VIII everything he wanted, and that's the trouble.
Well, that's the tension, you see. Jessica, do you sort of follow the Tudors? Do you think they're sort of a great retreat? Would he be? Have you read the book Wolf Hall, or are you still working on the Ian Lennox text? See what I actually did there. Seriously put the thing across.
Well, so many questions. I've always loved history, so and English history is very rich over in New Zealand. We don't really get it. So, yeah, I've always been interested in the monarchy and...
They didn't even realise New Zealand existed when Wolf Hall was actually taking place, of
exactly.
course. You know, it was a country that was not sort of regarded as hadn't been discovered as yet. James Cook hadn't done his whole thing. Obviously, it still existed, it just hadn't been discovered or invented. Anyway, and Emma, are you a historian?
I do enjoy history. That doesn't necessarily mean I know everything, though.
Who could? After all, history is so often revised, rewritten, repackaged together, and Hilary Mantel, probably one of those as well, when she tried to compare the contemporary sort of sequence of the Windsor family with respect to the Tudors, which I think she's obsessed with, Richard, but that's another line entirely.
Yes, we mustn't get on to Prince Andrew, or we'll never get to...
We'll never even progress to Testament of Youth.
No, but, I have to say, with Testament of Youth, the novel has been very much praised and deals with Vera Brittain. It gives an insight into how the First World War affected Britain's middle classes. Britain plays, Alicia Vikander plays Vera Brittain. Incidentally, Vikander, I saw a superb performance in a film called A Royal Affair, which was an absolutely marvellous period movie, which I recommend. But here it's a very sensitive performance, playing Britain, who during the First World War postponed her studies at Oxford to help as a voluntary aid detachment nurse in various theatres of conflict. And it deals with her romance with Roland Leighton, friend of her brother Edward, and played well by Kit Harington. Edward is played by Taron Egerton, her father, who isn't that keen on her having a university education, played by Dominic West.
It's very dangerous when women are educated. They start coming up with all sorts of strange things to change the world. So I just don't know what we're going on.
You say that to Shirley Williams, who, of course, Britain's daughter, and I would be very interested to hear the subsequent conversation.
Dame Baroness Shirley Williams, of course, let's face it. You know, she progressed through the ranks and indeed looked after education for a time.
Oh, yes, she did indeed. But, I mean, one of the problems with Testament of Youth, one can praise, and I just have, Alicia Vikander's performance in the central role. And the movie has all sorts of nods to other famous movies with certain shots and so forth. But there is the quality, and I hate to say this, because it is so worthy and so well intended, of the television drama about this. There is a flat feel to it. As a movie about a terrible conflict, it should have an impact that it somehow lacks. And that is its difficulty. It's very worthy. It's well acted. I liked Alicia Vikander in the central role. But you really do need that impact. And there's something about the way that director James Kent has handled this movie, script Juliet Tohidi, maybe just a flatness about it. Where you
but Richard, it's got Hayley Atwell, you know, the Sharon Carter herself, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Peggy Carter, I should say. You know, Hayley Atwell is in there as Hope. You know, Anna Chancellor in there. What's not to appreciate in that
case? A tremendous number of fine actors. Miranda Richardson, too, though I have to say, as Blue Stocking Dom, she's remarkably unconvincing, I thought. But
she's been Queen Elizabeth, so once you've actually done that in Blackadder, you know, there's nothing else to do.
Miranda Richardson got her, I thought, a bit premature. Surely, an award at the London Critics Circle, she hasn't had that much a body of work, to be perfectly honest.
I'd like you to say that to Kerry Gardner, her agent, when you were sort of in a social scenario there. She hasn't done...
She's done extremely well with what she's done, but she isn't Judi Dench.
I mean, but who is?
That is the
Samantha Bond.
That is the level of actress and actor who usually get the Dinners Pal Award for Excellence in Film at the London Critics Circle Film Awards. And as I say, there is a difference there. And I noted it, and one or two other critics commented on it as well. She's a good actress. Yes, she is, I thought, slightly miscast in Testament of Youth. But as I say, the problem with a movie that is very worthy is the lack of dramatic impact. Something that you certainly will get, let me tell you, in one way or another, and this has really raised hackles among a great many people, in American Sniper.
Look, it's directed by an 84-year-old. What's not to appreciate? You know, Clint Eastwood, rock and roll, 84 and still directing American Sniper movies.
Brilliant. You're absolutely right. In fact, Clint Eastwood, I mean, I am, on the whole, a great admirer of a lot of Clint Eastwood's movies, and certainly Unforgiven and The Letters from Iwo Jima. Let that be noted when we get to a fascinating war of words. Indeed, even among film stars, Jane Fonda has tweeted support for this movie, would you believe? I was reading the controversy with interest. The point, however, is not whether it is overtly jingoistic or not, but is it a good movie? Does it entertain? And does it also explain what America was doing in Iraq, where we see Chris Kyle, who is the U.S. Navy SEAL, who is the top sniper of all time, the deadliest marksman in United States history. I quote, 255 kills, 160 of them official, and he never shot anyone or claimed he never did.
Richard, according to Variety magazine, Clint Eastwood's Iraq war drama grossed a spectacular $30.5 million on Friday, the biggest single-day take in January. And it looks set to haul a record-breaking $80 million plus this Martin Luther Jr. King weekend. So who cares about the plot when it's making that kind of cash?
Good Lord, I never thought you'd say anything. I thought it was art. And, well, yes, the cinema, as Bernard Shaw quipped, is also an industry. How right you are to mention the fact that the movie is extremely popular. Is it well acted? Yes. Bradley Cooper has grit, and it's a very fine portrayal of someone who undoubtedly was a heroic figure, and there's no question he was much honoured, and the fighting sequences in this movie, where I do have to wax enthusiastic before I start being critical, is superlative visuals and certainly aerial shots of Fallujah and combat zones in Iraq, at the Hisar fighting, the action sequences, what happens in a sandstorm and does he escape and so forth. I mean, these are superbly filmed. They are exciting. They are very, very well done. And let it be said that I have recognized this as one of the reasons of the film's success, and certainly it shows at 84, I take your point, no doubt at all, that Clint Eastwood is on absolutely tip-top form. But, and here's the but, we follow Chris Kyle on our four tours of duty. We see also the effect that his involvement in battle zones as a sniper has on his marriage and the difficulties there, and also subsequently when he's helping veterans but also suffering very, very strong withdrawal symptoms and trauma. We also don't learn what happens when, well, the reasons for America's involvement in Vietnam, in Iraq, and indeed one of the
it was to do good and sanctify the earth, as American police officers do.
Film, now I must make this point, which is very deceptive. We see it through Kyle's eyes. There is the 9/11 attack and is in Iraq, and that would give the impression, if you didn't know that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein had no contact, that the one was linked to the other. It is the sort of attitude...
You mean it wasn't?
It wasn't, exactly, and the film doesn't point that out. And indeed, only one character, it is important to make this point, because that's why there's been so much controversy, only one character even mentions or even voices any doubts about whether America should have been in Iraq, and they are not explained. So Eastwood has it, though, certainly with the action sequences, but I do have to say this film is overtly jingoistic, and as for the rest of it, it's all on the net. The stars weigh in one side or the other.
Five words, actually. John Wayne, the Green Berets. I should say no more.
The phrase friend I was with actually thought it was an updated version.
Yeah.
I see that
one. There we are, you see. It's strange. And I suspect neither Jessica nor Emma have ever actually encountered John Wayne and the Green Berets.
No idea.
I ever saw that movie all the way through because I think it was something that really was pretty ghastly. I mean, one thing John Wayne didn't do in the bits I did see, and that is film it particularly well. This is an absolutely brilliantly poignant series of action sequences. The problem is, it isn't just the acting, which is excellent. Sierra Miller plays Carr's wife. Cooper is very good. It is the fact it doesn't explain anything or the background to anything that's actually going on. I mean, this is the difficulty where one has to fault a movie that is undoubtedly entertaining, and subsequently, I don't think I've ever seen a climax, not for a very long time, of a film with so much flag-waving, without giving out any spoilers. Climactically, there is a tremendous amount of the jingoistic.
Okay, well, again, quoting from Variety and Brett Lang's headliner here, American Sniper to hold off Johnny Depp and J-Lo, which sounds like a kind of interesting movie theme in itself, really. You know, Eastwood goes head-to-head with Johnny Depp and J-Lo.
Interesting, but if you go head-to-head with someone who plays Chris Kyle, I wouldn't do it, not having seen this movie, frankly. You go head-to-head with him, and there is a sniper who does. I'm not revealing no spoilers.
So the crucial thing is, Jessica and Emma, from the point of view of Testament of Youth, Wolf Hawk, or TV production, American Sniper, any of those floats your boat, anything you'll be checking out? Jessica first.
I think American Sniper. I've always had an interest in those.
You do want to be a war reporter, of course.
Exactly. So. But I am a bit aware because sometimes these films, I don't know, they. Well, you said that it has a climax, but I don't know, I've always been.
And she's just come back from Auschwitz, actually, Richard. So, you know, she was in Poland over the Christmas period. So, you know.
That must indeed have been one of the most sobering moments of your life.
I don't think so, actually. Jessica didn't quite sort of connect with that, but she did appreciate it. Was it a sobering moment, your time at Auschwitz or yours?
Oh, yeah. It was a real great experience. It just opened your eyes a bit more to the lives they led over there. And it's really sad, of course. But
bit of an understatement there in terms of the Second World War, Jessica, but never mind. We know what you're saying. And Emma, movies from your own point of view, because, of course, unlike Jessica, you've been to the Canary Islands. But,
you know, it works. Contrast. No, I have been. I went on a school trip to Auschwitz a few years ago, and it is just shocking. I mean, obviously, you get all the knowledge from the textbooks and reading history and everything, but until you actually go there, I don't think you quite realise how shocking it was.
And there's so much more information you get as well. Like I learnt so much just in the, it was a really quick tour. But
it's extraordinary from a historical perspective, though. I should admit, Richard, school trips to Auschwitz.
Sometimes
21st century writ large, I suppose. Well, anyway, in terms of the movies that we've actually looked at so far.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same boat as Jessica. I think American Sniper I'm most interested to see, but that's not necessarily saying that I will enjoy it because I am sort of worried about what you were saying, Richard, and how it, with connecting it with 9/11 and not really questioning why the war's going on.
Mm. Yes, I mean, this is the problem that, as you see it from the point of view of undoubtedly a sniper who had a certain ethical standards, if that is the phrase that could be used, before he executed his victims, because he shot those he had to shoot since he was a soldier and since he was had a certain task. But why was he there? Why was the United States there? And that cut, as I say, is a very disreputable one, because that simply isn't explained, and it should be. And also, there should have been, having raised through one character some doubts about America's presence, it simply isn't followed up. And climactically, as I say, without actually revealing the end, there's no question that it's where Eastwood's heart lies, but also where we should also be asking questions throughout this film, whilst we see brilliant depictions of action. I mean, since Saving Private Ryan, and it's interesting that Spielberg was going to film American Sniper until Eastwood took over, there's no doubt that that changed the genre, and war is so much more realistic when it's portrayed on screen. I was watching Saving Private Ryan last week again, and I mean, it holds up absolutely brilliantly, especially the first 20-plus minutes on Omaha Beach. And there's no doubt that, I mean, the way explosions take place, I mean, the sound and the music and so forth in this movie, I mean, the way...
Richard, there's nothing good about war except its ending. I will leave you with that. It's been fabulous, as ever. We touched base on Oscar nominations, American Sniper, Testament of Youth, Wolf Hall. We've managed to get them all sorted in. Can we actually fit in two? Yes, two connections before 9 o'clock. Well, we'll try. We've got Ian Lennox coming up next, and Justin Harper, who's going to be talking about the annual cost of bringing up a child. Could be quite frightening. Still, last two questions for yourself. Oh, what the hey? Let's use the new ones. Jessica, would you like to bowl them into Richard Fitzwilliams, please?
Okay. Have you ever been chased by a wild animal?
Very happily, I have not been chased by a wild animal. This I certainly come.
That's nice.
First
nice.
One.
Yeah. Next one.
But I do remember Roger Allam being trampled by a herd of cows in Tavaradru.
Yeah, let's just go there. And the next one.
Have you ever tasted sour milk?
Not to my knowledge, other than for seconds. And Listen,
it's a former Sun reporter. He said we should revamp the last two questions. I'm not happy with that. But anyway,
Sun reporter. I mean, but these aren't questions. They're bizarre science.
Exactly. I think he got the theory from Columbo. It's a TV series. Richard, we'll be back with next week.
It's getting all sorts of theories, and it's got into the news today for reasons we won't go into.
Exactly. Just don't go there.
If you had a big lizard in there or something really unusual, you know how people seem to have the most unusual pets these days.
Yeah, that's Rachel Abbott. Never mind. Life continues. Richard will be back. Ian Lennox is up next. We salute you, Richard. Happy Thursday.
Thank you.